And now, your go-to source for year-round fantasy hockey advice, DFS and betting coverage. This is NHL Fantasy on Ice.
How's it going, everybody? Pete and Nick back with you. NHL Fantasy on Ice as our season preview episodes of the show roll on this offseason. We're into September. We're about a month away from the start of the NHL season 2022-23. What's going on, Nick? We got stat projections on tap for today.
Not too much, Pete. Great to be with you once again as we get closer and closer to rookie camps, NHL camps getting underway. I am fired up for hockey season. I don't know about you.
Absolutely. And this show is all encompassing. So we're going to be talking some young players, some old players, some off-season movers, the top of the league, of course, in scoring for the upcoming season. I know last year there were 8 100-point scorers. Scoring was up across the whole league. And we're going to bring on Anna Dua, who's been helping me hand in hand with these stat projections this offseason. Thanks for joining us, Anna.
Thanks for having me. The weather's changing. The season's just around the corner. I know we've been working on this for some time, so I'm excited to dive right into it.
Throughout the show, definitely refer to our lists on nhl.com/fantasy, forward point projections, defenseman point projections, goalie team win projections, Nick, which kind of give an all-encompassing look at what the standings could look like by the end of the season, at least in the wins category.
Yeah, not to pump your respective tires too much. You guys did an exceptional job. I want you to project my life next. I wanted to ask you guys off the top, Anna, we can start with you. General philosophy, putting this together, because just looking on the surface, I can tell a lot of heart and soul and hard work went into this one.
A lot of heart and soul went into this. I mean, that's how I spent my Labor Day, in case anyone was wondering, was compiling all of these lists. So no Labor Day for me, but I think the general philosophy that Pete and I had compiling all of these projections was taking a look at how well these guys played last year, taking a look at some big moves. I know we talked in a couple of podcasts about how great this offseason was, changed the landscape for a lot of these divisions, and then just kind of using a little bit of voodoo, a little bit of psychic ability, and coming up with some numbers.
For sure. And yeah, we factor in power play usage, team goalie situations, projected line combinations for the upcoming season, you know, how some guys might bounce back from underachieving seasons, how some guys might regress from breakout seasons. And we kind of put it all together and try to do the best we can. We're never going to be right across the board, but we're pretty close on a lot of these projections dating history. So I'm excited about this episode. And I mentioned scoring was up across the league, Nick. Yeah. I mean, we have 6 guys projected for 100 plus points, including Jonathan Huberdeau, who joins the Calgary Flames. And his point total is down by 15, which I think is interesting, but we still have him cracking 100. So still pretty rare air for Hubie.
Yeah, I was crunching the numbers. So last year we had 8 different 100-point scores, 16 players notched 90 more points, and 15 of which were forwards, as we know, the one being Roman Josi as a defenseman. That's my intrigue. Like, I wonder about offense, Anna, moving forward. Is it going to step up? Are we going to take a step back? I'd be inclined to think we might look at the over when it comes to 8 last season. And that's taking nothing away from, obviously, the projections here. But I think we're at a level here in this era, Anna, where offense is driving everything. And I think we're going to continue to see it moving forward here.
I think we're definitely going to continue to see it moving forward. However, we see a lot of these teams are kind of meshing together a little bit. Some of these divisions are becoming really competitive. So they have these stacked offense. Some of them have great depth in their offense. And we've seen teams where, you know, the Calgary Flames at the beginning of the offseason, everyone saw Matthew Tkachuk, Johnny Gaudreau head on out. And they thought, you know what, that's it. Now this division's opening up. But then they came right back. They got Huberdeau. But they're competing against teams like the Edmonton Oilers, who we have very close to the Flames in our projections in terms of wins so far. So I think the offense is still going to be there. I think there's going to be some high scoring, but it's going to be close. It's going to be high scoring on both sides. And I think Pete's going to agree with me on this.
It will be. There are a lot of offseason moves involving players that had huge seasons. Like, just in addition to Huberdeau, it's not like we're being hard on him. We're hard on Johnny Hockey. We have him in the mid 80s in points after he had 115 and was tied with Huberdeau. So a massive drop off for him going to Columbus. Also Nazem Kadri, we have him coming down a clip going to that same Flames team. Again, he makes the team better overall. I like them better in the number 2 center spot with him. I like their defense better by adding Uyghur and losing nobody in that realm. So team-wise, team projection-wise, we have them right on Edmonton's tail. Edmonton, of course, added Jack Campbell and brought back Evander Kane and, you know, some other low-key additions. So we got 51 wins for Edmonton and 49 for the Calgary Flames. So maybe Battle of Alberta 2.0 could be in store this year, at least in the regular season. It should be an excellent matchup, Nick.
Yeah, you just never know. And simply put, especially with those fits in Calgary, when you look at, you know, Huberto, when you look at Nazem Kadri, is there going to be a dip because of they changed their mentality under Daryl Sutter? Like, there's a lot more question marks. Even in Florida, they're stripped their depth. You know, I was curious, Pete, too, with the Vancouver Canucks and JT Miller. I believe you have Miller slotted at 89 points, around 90 here, and certainly coming off a fresh contract, still a year remaining on his deal. The Vancouver Canucks are another team that intrigues me, and I think I'm looking at value, and this is probably a different episode, but I like the value in what Vancouver possesses, and more so, Pete, because of the head coach they have. Gabby Boudreaux loves offense, and we know that.
Right, and they have the wild card, Anna, with Kuzmenko. I'm high on Podkolzin, and everybody knows that by now. But you also have Bo Horvat. If he's healthy, he's like a 65-point player. You have Brock Besser, who has never hit 30 goals before in his career. To me, he's overdue to do that if he stays remotely healthy, Anna. And then also Elias Pettersson. I know he was playing a little bit wing down the stretch, but it was also tied into an injury. So if Vancouver is healthy, they have Pettersson, JT Miller, and Bo Horvat down the middle, center depth that is rivaled by few teams in the entire NHL.
Yeah, and in addition to their center depth and their amazing offense, I mean, come on, they have Quinn Hughes, they have Thatcher Demko. So they're a very, very well-rounded team. Quinn Hughes, top 15 among defensemen in assists last season, fifth in power play points. So he's a silent point producer. I know everyone knows he's a great defenseman, but he's right up there. I know I asked fans a while ago whether he was a top five defenseman in the league this upcoming season in fantasy, and a lot of our listeners said yes. So Quinn Hughes is another huge asset for the Canucks. Thatcher Demko is as good of a goalie as any other goalie in the league. When he's on it, he's on it. He can string together those wins. So the Vancouver Canucks are one of the most well-balanced teams in the league, I think, so far.
And you mentioned that fan question, and one that really jumped out to me that you posed as well was regarding Jack Eichel in that same division. I think a lot of people forget about the Vegas Golden Knights and how high their ceiling might be. And the big elephant in the room, the big question is, will Jack Eichel match what he did in the past with the Buffalo Sabres, or maybe even expand on it this year? He had 82 points in one single season with Buffalo. We haven't projected for a little bit more than that in the mid 80s. So that's a huge question. And if Vegas doesn't get top notch production from Eichel, they could be in big trouble.
For sure. And I think with Vegas, one of the most important things to consider is their health situation. And I think that's the biggest factor in answering this question for me. I know they got shafted a little bit with what happened with Robin Leonard. And I think if Eichel plays on a line, he stays healthy with Mark Stone, then he is going to surpass his point total from Buffalo, and he could hit a career high this season.
Yeah, I think bounce back candidates, you look at Jack Eichel, certainly. I think he has the potential to have his best season ever, assuming, again, he's fully healthy, as Anna just mentioned. And Mark Stone is fully healthy, right? Like, it's a different Vegas Golden Knights team that we've seen in the past. And, you know, they bring in Phil Kessel. They still have Petrangelo and Theodore on the back end. Like, they still have some pieces to be a really, really good team. I just wonder, from an offensive standpoint, I know Bruce Cassidy is there now. What kind of Vegas team do we see morphed into now, Pete, with, you know, the coaching staff previous gone and some other players off that roster? I just think it's going to be harder to score for Vegas than it has been the last couple of years. And I know they, to begin with, Pete, they've struggled with depth issues anyways, right?
Right. But the one different thing here is you could have a healthy Stone, a healthy Eichel. You add Phil Kessel, who's going to probably be on power play one. Theodore, I thought, had a rocky season last year, and he's still was among the league leaders in points outright. So again, that power play, ever since Vegas existed, I think has fallen short of expectations, but also factor in Bruce Cassidy, how good he was. He had a ton of talent to work with in Boston, but I think he pushed the right buttons at many different points, especially when that team was struggling through the years, and always got the most out of Marchand, Bergeron, Pasternak, and, you know, whether it was Torrey Krug or Charlie McAvoy of late. It's exciting to see this infusion of hopefully a guy that can turn around this lingering power play.
It's interesting, since we're talking about Vegas right now, and we just talked about Vancouver before, those two teams, Pete and I, had tied in our projections this season for 44 wins. So okay. I want to just hear both Nick and Pete. If you had to choose one of those two teams to have a better season, who's it going to be, Vancouver or Vegas?
Look, taking nothing away from Vegas, I just don't know what to make of their goaltending situation. So I'm all over Vancouver and I'm willing to die on this hill. Like if they have a bad year, you know, it's on me. But I think just the way I view it, guys, is like, look at the body of work of Bruce Boudreau in his career. Everywhere he seems to coach, he seems to extract the most offensively out of his team and he makes the playoffs. It's a different story when he gets to the playoffs, granted, but I think, you know, that's just my major takeaway from his legacy as a coach in this league, that I think you look at the personnel on that roster and Pete, you could argue that back end is still really, really bad. But when you have Thatcher Demko, you can mask that. I just prefer Demko than anything Vegas has. And I like the players up front too. So it's easy for me. I'm going with Vancouver, Pete.
I love Demko. I'm one of his biggest fans, but I'd rather take that defense that Vegas has if they're healthy with Shea Theodore. They still have Petrangelo and Alec Martinez, who missed a lot of time in recent years. But when he's healthy, good to go, I trust that back end more than what I've seen in Vancouver the past couple of years, because I've been a guy the past few years that has been super high on Vancouver and they've let me down 2 years in a row. Not to say they won't make it this year, but again, I think that defense could help Logan Thompson as a rookie eligible guy, even if he's, you know, middle of the road type goaltender, get you 25 to 30 wins. We have him projected for 26. It's a little conservative, but if he's getting you 25 to 30 wins, he'll be top five in the Calder conversation as long as he gets you, you know, a 915 save percentage or something like that. So, you know, even with Leonard out, you know, there are many moons ago that they had Fleury running the show there, but I still feel really confident in the Golden Knights. If they're healthy, they're a better team than Vancouver, and I'm pretty convinced at that.
Fair debate. I would say in general to ask you guys too, like I would argue that this is the hardest division, Anna, to quantify when it came to point projection, because I think Calgary and Edmonton are excellent teams. But after that, I just don't know who to believe in. Do you?
It was a tough division because even though Calgary and Edmonton, they do stand out within the Pacific, even when you go down the list, there's guys from every single team that could have great seasons, even teams that we see lower in our projections. Like when I'm taking a look at Anaheim, Mason McTavish is going to be joining the Anaheim Ducks. He's a Calder favorite, in my opinion. I think he's going to have a breakout rookie season. We saw how well he did for Canada and the World Juniors. And then you take a look at Seattle, and Seattle last season wasn't much to talk about. They didn't have the inaugural season they were hoping for. But now when I take a look at their first line, I see this first line of Burakovsky, Beniers, Bjorkstrand, possibly. That's a good first line. That's a good first line that can hold its own against a lot of different lines that they could possibly play against with some of the most consistent point producers for various teams where they're coming from. And Matty Beniers had the best start you could possibly ask for in the NHL at the end of last season. So even as we go down the list, we see consistency. We have San Jose ranked the lowest with 29 wins in that division. James Reimer is still a pretty solid goaltender. Timo Meier, one of the best forwards in the NHL. He's an elite player. If he was surrounded by a little bit of a better environment, we would see him right up there in the top 10s and a lot of the totals. So it is a tough division to quantify, but it's interesting because this is definitely the division that stands out to me as having a good, solid option on every single team.
Timo Meier is still in the 80s in our point projections, despite those team flaws, which are obvious in San Jose. And then another team we haven't really talked about today that should be right up there, in my opinion, with the likes of Calgary and Edmonton is the LA Kings, and they add Kevin Fiala. So maybe we could see a wrinkle for LA that we really haven't seen if you date back to the year, you know, the Doughty Kopitar era, where they have not really had anyone not named Kopitar score 70 plus points dating back to their 2012 championship year. Even that year, their regular season offensive totals were among the bottom of the league. So you could see maybe Kopitar get 75 plus in a bounce back season, Nick. And then also Fiala, if he's even to remotely replicate what he did last year on the second line with LA, you could see him get back into the 79 range we haven't projected for, maybe even 80 plus.
Yeah, it's just interesting. When I think of the LA Kings, I don't think offense. And Kevin Fiala is their one grand move of the offseason. I'm not sold this is a legitimate team yet. I know they made the playoffs last year, but I think there's going to be some pushback from other teams, namely the Vancouver Canucks. The Vegas Golden Knights obviously will be in that conversation too. But certainly, I think you look at that roster, there is potential. And I think a lot of it comes in the kids. Can they take that next step? You know, the Byfields, the Kaliyevs of the world, can they take that next step? But certainly I think you guys are onto something with that combo, with the potential of a Kopitar, potentially with a Fiala. They lose Dustin Brown there. Like, LA is a fascinating team to me in general when you look at that Pacific Division, Anna.
It is. It is. And there, we haven't even mentioned Adrian Kempe. I think he's another player to consider. He had a breakout season last year. He hit NHL career highs in goals with 35 and points. He had over 50 points. He's right on the edge of 60 points for us this season. And so there's a lot of untapped potential in LA, but I do agree with Nick. I think it's going to be tough for them to compete against some teams like Vegas or Vancouver in the standings.
Our Instagram is always on fire at NHL Fantasy. Got some write-ins. We got Dallas saying too low. The Winnipeg Jets. Pete, how do you feel about the Central here?
Well, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because a lot of these, if the Pacific's going to get five teams in the playoffs, then we're going to see a major drop off from the middle tier in that Central Division. One team that jumps out to me when I looked back in the 32 and 32 and really looked at the offensive output of a team, I was kind of stunned looking back at it, how good the Nashville Predators were offensively last season. They had like a top 10 offense. They had all these different guys with 60 plus points. They had Matt Duchene, 86 points, Roman Josi, 96. We have him coming down a little bit into the high 80s for Josi. Philip Forsberg also in the 80s and 40 plus goals. And then even guys like Granlund and Ryan Johansson had 63 plus points apiece. So that's something where I don't necessarily trust that offense to the extent that they produced last year to replicate it. And that's a team that maybe could fall out of the playoff mix at the exposure of that one of those Pacific teams.
Yeah, that's the one thing we've noticed here in a couple mock drafts into the preseason, where people are sort of afraid to go near Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene and expecting sort of a, you know, a bit of a bounce, you know, the other way when it comes to Philip Forsberg. Like, regression is a word, Anna, I think that's going to be used here with the Nashville Predators. But this is another division. Like, it's Colorado guys and then everybody else, in my opinion. I think Minnesota's maybe taking a step back due to cap reasons. Losing Kevin Fiala is going to be big. I know you get Matt Boldin in the mix, maybe Marco Rossi too, but I have a lot more question marks after Colorado, Anna, if that makes sense.
I think that was the best way you could have described this division. That's exactly what we were thinking too. And, you know, it's going to be way close after Colorado too. Colorado is by far the front runner. I think St. Louis is right behind them. They have some really exciting pieces. They had a phenomenal offense, a lot of depth there, a lot of young stars coming up. But then I'm taking a look at Winnipeg to sneak in. I know every single time we'd look up these projections for Winnipeg, I was just flabbergasted by all of the production Kyle Connor had. Kind of understated. Pete and I talked about this a lot. Second in the NHL in even strength goals with 36, behind only Austin Matthews. So now if Kyle Connor plays on the top line for the Winnipeg Jets, if he plays on a healthy Winnipeg Jets team, what's his ceiling looking like?
Yeah, call me patriotic, but another sleeper team I'm looking at is the Winnipeg Jets. And I'll intertwine this, guys, into your goalie projections, where I wrote down simply David Rittich isn't winning 10 games with Winnipeg. We're going to see how good of a coach Pete Rickbonus truly is, man, because watching a lot of David Rittich, he went from big save Dave to being no save Dave. And again, they've been looking for a backup in Winnipeg for a long period of time. I know Comrie's now with Buffalo. I guess he's their number one, but they got to give Connor Hellebuck some help here, and that's taking nothing away from David Rittich, your guy.
Connor Hellebuck is an obvious bounce-back candidate for this season. He was second in games played behind UC Saros. We talked about it earlier in the offseason with the coaching changes. I like Bonus more than I like Pete DeBoer. So last year, Dallas was the last team in, and Winnipeg was one of the first few teams out. I think that's going to flip-flop. I think Winnipeg will make the playoffs this year and Dallas will not. And, you know, they have the centerpiece of that team in Dallas with Ottinger and Robertson, but I have my questions about the middle of the roster and the lower part of the roster compared to some of these other teams. And yeah, Kyle Connor, I mean, just, I think he had 45 plus goals and assists last year. Only a few players, like five players in the whole NHL, did that last year, and 300 plus shots. So, I mean, Kyle Connor did that last year during a season when he was playing mostly with Pierre-Luc Dubois instead of Mark Scheifele. So we always talk about, we give guys praise for that, right? We gave Huberto praise for playing at an even higher clip on a separate line from Barkov. I'd like to give the same type of praise to Kyle Connor for what he did last year.
Yeah, definitely. I think when you look at this Winnipeg team in general, I think there's just potential. Like, that's the biggest word I would use. And I know a lot of people are off on them, but like, we're a year removed from a lot of people picking Winnipeg, Anna, to win the Stanley Cup. I think you bring in a new head coach, you have one of the better goaltenders in the league in Connor Hellebuyck, and you still have a lot of offense, right? You look at Pierre-Luc Dubois, provided he probably doesn't want to stay there long-term. The rumors are that he wants to be a Montreal Canadian. Mark Scheifele's looking for a bounce back. The captain, Blake Wheeler, obviously some question marks on the back end, but all in all, I think sleeper team across the board. I just wonder, bringing in Rick Bonus, what that means for the offense, because you look at some guys on Dallas and it left you wanting more a bit. So that's my only wonder with Winnipeg, Anna.
They did, but then there were players on Dallas like Robertson, mm-hmm. like Hintz even, who really surprised me and showed me how high their upside was. So Winnipeg's definitely one of those teams that's on the edge, but they have such a high upside. And, you know, this has to be like one of the best seasons for like Canadian hockey teams in the NHL. Like across the board, there's so much excitement other than the team you just mentioned, the Montreal Canadiens. But shifting on over to the Atlantic Division, we see a lot of Canadian teams, the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Ottawa Senators, way up there in projections in terms of Ottawa, at least. And we see Toronto kind of closing in to the rest of the teams in that division. That's a really, really competitive division. So I want to get your thoughts on that, Nick.
Yeah, it's fascinating, right? I think you look at the Florida Panthers, I would argue they got worse. Tampa's Tampa. Toronto doesn't have a goalie. Like, there's a lot of question marks. I think Buffalo, quite frankly, could be a lottery team. I do think Ottawa is much improved, but I'm not buying them just yet. I think Detroit's better. I think that division in general is open and ripe for the taking. And I'm just curious for some teams, especially considering, Pete, all the divisional play, what that means for sort of the points race and who ultimately wins this division. And quite frankly, from a Tampa perspective, do they even want to win this division, Pete?
Well, I also think you can zero in on those, the third, fourth, and fifth best teams in the division, and say over the course of the offseason, we knew at the beginning that Brad Marchand and Charlie McAvoy from the Bruins were going to miss significant time, and they still probably will. But even with some of their short-term moves with Bergeron and Krejci trading for Pavel Zacha, I mean, I still think Jeremy Swayman has a really high win ceiling, even if he's just the 1A to Linus Ullmark's 1B, still has 30 win potential and could be top five in save percentage in the league this upcoming season. So over the course of the offseason, it's not that our opinions have tilted, but things seem to be looking up and up in the short term for the Bruins, and then the short term for the Leafs with the goalie tandem and some of their offseason losses keep looking further and further down. So that's why you see Toronto only projected for one more win than the Ottawa Senators. That's how, you know, crazy things have changed.
I like that you guys come on here and face the music, because a couple questions via Instagram saying Boston too low and Toronto too low. But I'm right there with you. Like, I think there's a lot of question marks. And Anna, I think there's a lot of value in a Boston Bruins team, again, provided they can stay healthy and stay afloat the first month and a half. Once those guys return, it has like the Last Dance feel, you know, like I feel like I'll be on Netflix during the next pandemic in like 10 years. So now watching, you know, a series on the Boston Bruins final season together.
That's a team you can never count out. Even if they have players likely to miss some time, those players can produce in a short amount of time. So even if their season is shortened, I still see the point production being there. Whereas when we take a shift over to Toronto, it's tough because you have this elite core of talented young players. And I'm almost willing to say that maybe their best is behind them, because every single year, the team has become a little bit weaker, a little bit weaker. So you really wonder whether it was their best chance to win 2-3 years ago and how they're going to really stand up this year with all of the losses they had.
Yeah, don't worry, no more pandemics, fingers crossed. I want to get to the Metro Division, guys. The New York Islanders, this is where I disagree with you, but it's for the better for Isles Nation. I think they're going to be a better team, Pete, and they're only a couple years removed from back-to-back appearances in the conference finals, right? I think you want to look at stat projections for Ilya Sorokin. I'm forecasting a massive year. I know they missed out on getting a perennial gun in the offseason, but I think the Islanders, just what they have, you know, in place, who they have there, seasoned pros, Lane Lambert now behind the bench. I think they're a team that gets back in the right direction. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. I also think, you know, we're going to catch some heat for having Ilya Sorokin for only 28 wins. It's just, if we're going to project them for, we have them projected for 5 more wins than they had last year, which is pretty generous because they didn't do anything this offseason other than add Alexander Romanov. So a young defenseman who could make somewhat of an impact, but is not going to move or shift anything, at least this season. So therefore, if we're projecting them for five more and Semyon Varlamov is still there in a contract year, he could be traded if they're not in contention, but he's still there. So he's going to get at least a decent amount of starts, even if Sorokin is the clear number one. So we have Sorokin for more wins than he had last year. We have the Islanders for five more than they had last year. And we have them as a fringe playoff team, which is what I think they are. So that's kind of just explaining why we have Sorokin where we are. Because you look at Sorokin, he might be one of the three or four best goalies in the league, but he's like 15th or something in our win projections. That's why he still might lead the league in save percentage in the best case scenario, though.
With the Islanders, there's a lot of players that individually have very high upside. They could have career years this upcoming season. Teams aside, just looking at individual players, for me, Sorokin is in the conversation to be the second best goalie in the NHL behind Shesterkin. And I think it's very valid given the fact that he had the second best save percentage behind him last season. So the Islanders have him, they have Noah Dobson. But then I ask you, Nick, I want to project them higher, but who am I projecting them higher in the Metro than? There's Carolina, there's the Rangers, yeah, there's Pittsburgh, and there's Washington. And if you ask me, I take all four of those teams over the Islanders. And in order to get more wins, they got to beat some of those teams.
Yeah, I see your point. There's always one or two teams that come out of nowhere, but point well taken. I think you look at Washington, I wonder what they are without Nick Backstrom. I know they add guys like Dylan Strome. Pittsburgh's getting a bit longer in the tooth. I think across the board, goaltending is just so vital. And I look at that Alex Kreese, and I look at the way that they can play defense. And I wonder, along those lines, the New Jersey Devils, one of you can play the role, or maybe both of you, of super fan David Satriano. I like Mackenzie Blackwood, Pete, to have a better season than he did last year. And simply put, I just don't believe in Vitek Vanacek. We just talked about Washington being a great team. Well, why did they give up their goalie then? They gave up both goalies. So Vitek Vanacek goes to New Jersey. I think people are way too bullish on the New Jersey Devils. I'm not feeling them at all. I was expecting a big offseason where they land Johnny Gaudreau and they got Andre Palat.
So Mackenzie Blackwood used to be their starter, and now he's at least the 1B, maybe the clear backup behind Vanacek, in my opinion, at least. So we have Blackwood projected for 10 wins. He had nine last year in 25 games. We maybe undersold him a little bit, but if you think that's going to be a closer debate, sure, he could have 15, 16 wins for you. Yeah. I just think the wins are going to be so hard to come by for them. Defensively, I don't think they're better necessarily than anybody in that whole division. I mean, the Flyers might even be better defensively than they are this year because they have Tortorella and that structure. So we'll see what kind of an impact that is. But I don't see the Devils making the playoffs this year. If you're looking for a team to get in on the mix compared to the eight East teams that made it last year, you could look at maybe a Boston or Toronto falling out, maybe a Pittsburgh or Washington falling out. And the teams that I think could be on the cusp, Anna, Columbus Blue Jackets after adding Johnny Gaudreau and with some of their young talent, and then also teams like Detroit and Ottawa. One of those three teams should make the playoffs, and then one of the four that I mentioned prior should probably come out. It's just tough to choose right now because the teams that were in last year are stronger than the teams that improved this offseason still.
I'm right there with Pete. Dave Satriano's in the office today. I'm in the office today. So unfortunately, I can't play devil's advocate. But after listening to this, he's going to come over to my desk and we're going to have a little tilly over what I'm about to say. But, you know, Vitek Vanacek, I think, is an improvement for the Devils, even though I'm not high on him as a goalie. And I think that says all that I need to say about how I feel about the Devils heading into this season. He's been okay. He had a 915 even strength save percentage since entering the league. And, you know, the Devils allowed the second most 5-on-5 goals last season in the NHL. So he does help the team out in that aspect, but there's just so much competition in the East, and some players who had really great years last year, like Jesper Bratt, I don't see them replicating that again this season. I don't think they have that level of consistency. There's a lot of lineup questions. I really don't know where anyone's going to play. I don't know what position every person on this team is going to play. So when I take a look at that, I just don't see them finding a way in this year.
I'm feeling bounce back season Dougie Hamilton on the back end. You guys know this. Pete, let's talk about the guy that went home in quotations to Columbus, Johnny Gaudreau, Elvis Merzlikins. I know you're very high on him. I think Columbus is going to be a good team. I just can't get to that level where they're a bona fide playoff team. I think they'll be involved in the conversation, but your guess is as good as mine as who's going to be the number one seed to play with these big boys. I guess it's Boone Jenner to start.
Well, I mean, I think it also depends on how they approach it, right? There's so much offense in Johnny Gaudreau and Patrick Laine, and there's no defense. So do you kind of put like more of a defensive center up there to try to limit how many goals are going to be coming in on the opposite direction? Because you really need, when those two guys are on the ice, especially if they stack them together, you need to heavily outscore your opposition if Columbus is going to be a contending team in that division. The reason why I like Elvis Merzlikins more than Vitek Vanacek is because he'll have, you know, decent defensemen in front of him, and he'll have a crazy heavy workload. Like last year, he was the top 10 in the league in games played, and he's been banged up in recent years too. So I think that Merzlikins has 30 win potential, even if Columbus misses the playoffs, just because he's going to play so many games. He had mid to high 20s last year, and they were a horrible team at points. So they should be better, and he could get you 30 wins. So that's why I like him as a sleeper goalie.
Fair enough. Of all the positions, I think the most difficult one, and Anna, you guys can probably agree putting these lists together, has to be goaltenders, right? Like I just think the position has become so volatile that try to handicap how many wins a guy is going to get, I just think you're going to get blue in the face trying to do so, right? Because of all the injuries, because of the tandem share, you know, because of everything enlisted in analytics and coaches riding the hot hand. I just think it's such a difficult position in fantasy hockey. Would you agree?
It is. It is the most difficult position. We started off the show talking about how strong the offenses are across the league, and it makes the job way tougher for all of these guys between the pipes. So it is definitely the most difficult position to project. A lot of goalies, not even sure shot starters this season. So we have to decide what we think, how many games they're going to play and who they're going to play against. Take a look at the schedules and see how many wins they can really collect there.
So I came on the show today with a bevy of questions. Being a professional broadcaster, I am. I've always got questions. An NHL defenseman hasn't hit 100 points in 30 years, way back when, Brian Leetch. Why not this year, Pete? Can it happen, you think?
It can. I mean, one thing about these projections and the points and the wins, it doesn't necessarily indicate the absolute ceiling for all these guys. So, you know, I think that a defenseman projected for 90 points like Cale Makar could certainly take that even a step further. I wouldn't even rule out some of those other guys like Adam Fox and his potential to score 90 plus points in the near future for the Rangers with all that offense. And if Panarin's a 100 point scorer and Chris Kreider doesn't come down that much in the goals department from 50 plus, maybe he's a 45 goal scorer, still pretty damn good. So, and Zibanejad, we have for the mid 90s as well, right up there with, you know, some guys like that, some of the upper echelon centers in the league. So that could affect positively in Adam Fox and Victor Hedman. Even he could get up into the 90s. We saw him hit a career high in points last year with Tampa, dealing with a lot of injuries on offense with Kucherov and Point and different guys. So Hedman just had his best season in the NHL very quietly too.
We're not even talking about who got so close, just barely missed the mark with Roman Josi last year. And we have him projected for 87 this season, right behind Cale Makar once again, just those two standing out in the defensive front. But we did talk a little bit earlier about how Nashville could have the opportunity to really pick up some momentum this year. They're in a division where maybe Roman Josi can get back to the same level he had last season. So that's another player I'd be watching on the defensive front.
Just looking at the list compiled, the top 60 D-man projections, I think there's a lot of value once you go down the list a bit. Obviously, guys like Devon Taves, Brent Burns, I'm so intrigued to see what he does with the Carolina Hurricanes. I think newfound optimism going from lowly San Jose to Carolina, who I think is a cup contender. Thomas Chabot with the elevation in front of him. What does that mean? What does that mean for Jake Sanderson? Noah Dobson, guys, is, I think, somebody who can get to the 60-point threshold. Like, I just think I saw so much, especially on a team that is limited offensively. And Noah Dobson is another guy, Pete, that I'm really, really high on this season.
Right, and the offense could open up even more on the island, which could favor somebody like him, could favor a Romanov if you're looking for him to make a big splash in his first season after the trade for Montreal, where I think he was really underutilized for the Montreal Canadiens. They probably should have kept him, and he could have been running their first power play this year. Still pretty young guy, but we'll see how that trade pans out for Montreal. Unfortunately, Montreal is not going to be having Carey Price for a large chunk of the season, maybe the whole season since we last talked. So
yeah,
I saw one fan was asking us about Montreal and saying we were too low on them. If there's no Carey Price, how high can you be on Montreal? If we're being honest, especially with their kind of rebuild and building around some of these 22 and under guys. But one guy that jumps out to me that you mentioned, Devon Taves, he plays with Cale Makar. If Makar is going to hit 100 points, Devon Taves could hit like 75 or 80. I mean, last year he had a 71 point pace. He missed some time, but he had 57 and 66. So Devon Taves is up there. Maybe could finish as high as top five in scoring if he's healthy on the top pair with Cale Makar.
Yeah, Colorado's so filthy. Like Bowen Byram, I'm very intrigued to see what he does offensively. And I'm just, it's an embarrassment of riches. And I always like to quantify and say, hey, there's only one puck to go around. That's the old conversation with Miro Heiskanen and John Klingberg with the Dallas Stars. So I wonder if that takes away a bit from Devon Taves, Anna, and goes to like a Bowen Byram, or maybe I'm just reading too much into it, right?
I think Devon Taves definitely could benefit a lot, just given the fact we saw what happened last season. We saw what happened during the playoffs, but I do agree. I think it's really good to look even deeper down the depth chart. And I think a lot of guys are going to benefit just from being surrounded by that Colorado squad. And I kind of want to shift the conversation over a little bit to a fan question we got. So we had these defensemen like Brent Burns on Carolina. We have Cale Makar, Devon Taves on Colorado. What about a defenseman like Seth Jones, who has a very high individual ceiling? He's on the Chicago Blackhawks, and we projected him for 46 points. And a fan asked us about Seth Jones in particular and whether he's worth taking even with the way the Blackhawks are right now. So Nick, what's your thoughts?
I vowed 2 years ago to never select Seth Jones again in fantasy hockey. He's just that guy that always lets me down. So it's a prove it season for me with Seth Jones. Go out there, Seth, do your thing, get back to the Seth Jones we saw in Columbus, and I'll take you again in fantasy hockey, because I think Chicago's obviously going to be terrible. They're going to vie for one of the top picks in next June's draft. There's going to be offense to go around a bit of it, and I think there's no pressure to succeed, which, Pete, I think will benefit Seth Jones, but I'm not jumping to take him, if that makes sense. If he falls in my lap as maybe my number four defenseman, I'll be happy with that. I don't know if you view him differently.
I'm sure Seth Jones has some mixed feelings about what's going on right now, because he's making a ton of money for what he is at this point. Maybe he already peaked a couple of years ago. They brought him on to try to be part of like a win now movement, and now it's a different regime, and they traded away all the good young players, and they're probably going to trade Patrick Kane in the next couple of weeks. So we'll see what happens. At least before the deadline, Patrick Kane won't be playing there because he's in a contract year. So he'll be playing for some other contender out there, remains to be seen. But Seth Jones is going to be a man on an island. He might very well score 45, 50 points like he did last year when he had 51. But my goodness, I'm not drafting him in fantasy, because I don't even want to know what his plus minus is going to be by the end of the season with nobody around him.
So another defenseman in a very similar situation, we have Tony DeAngelo with the Philadelphia Flyers. So we have him for 45, Seth Jones for 46. So rapid fire, are you taking Seth Jones and DeAngelo if you had to choose one?
Ooh, that's a good debate. I'm going to go Anthony DeAngelo. I have always believed in the player. He's one of the top power play quarterbacks in the league. Whereas I look at Seth Jones, there's just too much to do in Chicago now with no one there. So Pete, simple answer for me, it's Tony D.
Can I go neither and take like a rookie like Jake Sanderson?
You can't answer
instead?
That way.
So that's what I would probably do. I'm not necessarily targeting either of those guys, Tony D or Seth Jones. So with all respect to those guys that they deserve, they are two of the best point producing defensemen in the league, but I just don't like the team situation. So I'd rather take someone beneath them in our point projections, a younger guy, a rookie eligible guy, even a, I'd rather wait a couple of rounds later for my fourth or fifth defenseman and take a Kalen Addison or a Simone Edvinson or even a Jacob Chychrun, someone like that, that might get traded. You could see some appeal over the course of the season build up on an upward trajectory for Chychrun. So that's what I'm looking at. So I'm fading both of those guys.
Yeah, it might be a wait and see approach. Sadly, we needed an answer. We didn't get one from Pete Jensen there. But a couple other guys I have my eyes on, Miro Heiskanen. I was surprised to find out he hasn't hit the 50-point threshold at all in his career. I think this is the year John Klingberg is gone. And I referenced it earlier. I'm expecting monster things from Dougie Hamilton. There's a reason why they handed him that contract. And he's put out the numbers in years past. I know injuries have been a bit of a concern the last little while, but I'm expecting Dougie Hamilton to get back into that threshold of like 50 to 55 points, maybe even pushing 60. I just really, really believe in the player. And I love the attachment clearly to guys like Jack Hughes there.
He could. He still had a lot of shots last season. So he had 197 shots, tied with Jesper Bratt last season. He just had the worst shooting percentage of his NHL career with 4.6%. So Dougie Hamilton's trying. He's trying his level best. He just got to get lucky. So maybe this is the bounce back season for him. I think he's going to do better this season than he did last season. I think he's definitely going to improve. It's just how much can he improve with this new environment? Because the teams he's played in past years before he came to New Jersey, they were just more well-rounded, better teams with an easier schedule depending on who they're playing against.
And again, I think if your league doesn't count plus minus, you can look at all of these lists, or if it doesn't count peripheral goalie categories, want to remind people that these projection lists can be used for a wins only league or a points only league, that type of thing, the simpler formats out there. And in those type of leagues, you can look at a team, a player from a team that might not be in contention, like a Vince Dunn, and see a lot of fantasy value. Last year, it was Shane Goss to spare, right? With like 40 plus points out of completely left field. But that's like the same conversation as Seth Jones. Yeah, Vince Dunn, Tony D. Even if you go a little lower, like rookie defenseman Owen Power, and you expect him to maybe be in the low 40s at best, but you really never know. If Buffalo ends up surprising people, it will be due in part to their young rookie movement, and that includes Owen Power. So he could be heavily involved in their offense this year.
Adam Boakvist is another name I would throw into that conversation. I think you can find a lot of value outside of maybe the top 10, 15 defensemen. There's a lot of high-end elite, you know, fantasy defensemen. And then the middle, there's like a lot of guys in the middle. And then there's some guys who I think are worth flyers at the bottom. That's the way I view it. So I think if you don't get a guy, a high-end guy who could be a point per game guy, I think you chill out, Anna.
I think there's a lot of value in the defensive position, especially this year. There's a lot of defensemen that I think are going to have a breakout season. Thomas Chabot is at the top of my list for the Ottawa Senators. I think he's really set up with a much improved power play, top power play unit for the Sens this season. And we actually had a fan question, a fan statement, not even a question. Our fans are making projections now, guys. And they said Ottawa should be third. So I want to hear, how high could the Ottawa Senators finish this year in the league? I want a position, and Pete can't cop out this time.
I know. My proclamation right here, right now, guys, aside from Dougie Hamilton, of course, I love Dougie Hamilton. The Ottawa Senators will not make the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's a different type of feel when you're no longer the hunter, but the hunted, right? They've had this massive offseason. Alex DeBrincat, Claude Giroux, they're going to play 7-6 hockey games because Thomas Chabot's their number one defenseman, and he's one of the worst defensive defensemen in you know, defenders in the league. Like, they have some major league question marks. Maybe they can get Jacob Chychrun, but I think Ottawa is more flawed than people are giving them credit for. And to compare them to a Toronto or to a Florida or to a Tampa or even to a Boston, Pete, I think is borderline reckless.
It may be, but I'm probably going to pick Ottawa to make the playoffs. I'm not sure if it's over Toronto or Boston, but probably not Boston. So you never know. I might go bold up in Canada and say the Senators make the playoffs over the Toronto Maple Leafs. If you want to say I'm crazy, go right ahead. But what's going on in Toronto is a pressure-packed situation that could implode in terms of them, you know, maybe having to fire somebody at some point this season or next off season if things don't go well. And the goaltending tandem is worse than Ottawa's with Anton Forsberg and Cam Talbot. I'd rather take those guys. And then if you're looking at the defense in Toronto, maybe it's a little better if Giordano and Muzzin are healthy, but Muzzin has not been healthy half the time, I feel like, since he's joined the Maple Leafs. And I'm not kind of putting my chips in on the side of aging Mark Giordano on defense. So outside of the top two lines in Toronto, I think there are a lot of holes. I wouldn't be surprised if a team like Ottawa finished higher than them with their young players, and they haven't hit their peak quite yet. And I still don't think many people are taking them as seriously as we are, because right, we're the stat gurus and stuff like that. We really appreciate the team that Ottawa has built whereas they're still relatively forgotten in the big picture around the league.
I agree with Pete. I'm not going to say the way Nick phrased it. I'm not going to say the Toronto Maple Leafs aren't making the playoffs next year because I have a layover in Billy Bishop tomorrow and I don't want anyone to come get me. But I do think that the Ottawa Senators, I'm liking their chances to make the postseason. I'm liking their chances to win one or two rounds in the postseason. I see a Battle of Ontario coming up too, not just the Battle of Alberta. And speaking of these Canadian teams, the other most bold fan question we got was the projection everyone wants to know, right? Someone said the Oilers are going to win the Cup. And that's a pretty bold projection. I don't necessarily hate it, but if you had to choose one team right now, who are you taking, Nick?
Jack Campbell walks his cat. That's my response.
I think the Calgary Flames would beat the Edmonton Oilers in the playoffs if they played right now after the opposite happened last year. Yeah. So Canadian team most likely to win the Cup this season. I would go with the Calgary Flames. I think at different points last season, we saw a lot of the pieces in position for them to go on a run if they clicked at the right time. They just really ran out of gas in that high-scoring series against the Oilers. But I think they're even more equipped to win a series like that this time around.
Yeah, I'll rephrase in saying it's been 30 years since the Canadian team last won the Stanley Cup. Who is closest to a Stanley Cup? I would concur that it is the Edmonton Oilers. Again, I still wonder about a goaltender who struggles with confidence. There are a lot of goaltenders out there, but when it's pressure cooker time in the Stanley Cup playoffs, can you crumble like that? I don't know. But I think Alberta is the closest to winning a Stanley Cup here. I'll answer it that way, Anna. Is that proficient enough for you?
I think that's a fair answer. I think either of those two teams have a pretty decent shot this year. They're both improved from the offseason. The Calgary Flames are giving me a heart attack with going up and down and up and down with all the moves they're making, but I think they're in a very solid spot, and you never know. Don't want to jinx it. I'm going to touch wood right now, but it might be coming back up north across the border this year.
And I had a question about the goalie rankings and projections regarding Jacob Markstrom, because after Andrei Vasilevskiy and Igor Shesterkin, they're number one and two in our point or goalie win projections. They're also one and two in our goalie rankings. And then there's a big drop off. Does Jacob Markstrom have a case to be either the third ranked goalie or the third most wins at the goalie position compared to other guys like Freddie Anderson, UC Saros, Ilya Sorokin was the write-in popular guy from fans because we're a little lower on him in that category. But who do you guys think will finish third in the NHL in wins behind Shesterkin and Vasilevskiy?
It's a good question, right? I think for a variety of reasons, if you were to pull me to finish up last regular season, I would say, yeah, for sure. But I start to wonder what happened in the Battle of Alberta for Jacob Markstrom. And I start to wonder if maybe they look at Dan Vladar a bit more than they did last year to keep their number one fresh. Now, this is just speculation on my part, and that's why I wonder if there could be a dip in terms of production for Markstrom from a fantasy point of view in terms of wins in the regular season. So I think Freddie Anderson will be involved, but again, he has injury history and injury problems. You know, Thatcher Demko, again, if I'm high on the Vancouver Canucks, maybe he's involved in that. I just talked about my feeling, my thoughts on David Riddick as the backup in Winnipeg, aka I think Connor Hellebuck is going to play a lot. So I think he's involved in that conversation. And don't sleep on the name Marc-Andre Fleury with Minnesota, especially considering, Anna, who is behind him in the pecking order, too.
You can't get me to say anything bad about Marc-Andre Fleury. I love that guy. I think he is one of the most solid goalies to ever rely on for any team. I ate Fleury flakes all the time as a kid. I don't know if you ever eaten Fleury flakes. I want you guys to tell me if any of you guys have ever tried that cereal. It was honestly not that bad. So Marc-Andre Fleury is always a good option. But for me, the answer is clear cut. It's Freddie Anderson. He's had some injury issues, but I mean, he's still a really consistent goaltender all across the board. Had the third best save percentage in the NHL last season, .922, is on that Carolina Hurricanes team. He's surrounded by a phenomenal team. Max Pacioretty, if he gets healthy, those are some serious cup contenders this year.
I just wanted to add too, we haven't mentioned his name. We haven't mentioned the team that really won the Stanley Cup very much. Alexander Georgiev, does he pull away as the number one goaltender? If he does, I think he's involved in this conversation, Pete.
I think it's interesting that Sakic, when they made the trade, the day that he talked after the trade, he said that he's going to be their starting goalie. So he gave you the answer right there. I mean, you could see a mediocre season from Georgiev, but the higher volume, better team around him, ton of goal support. not that the Rangers weren't providing him with goal support. They were. He was getting a lot of wins last year when he did play. But being around that Avalanche group from top to bottom, I mean, he's really bound for a 30-plus win season by default if he plays 50, 55 games. So we'll see. But I think a dark horse to get back to the maybe high 30s, low 40s in wins is Hellebuck, who we were talking about earlier. If you look back, I think over the past 10 years or so, Hellebuck has one of the highest win totals in a single season at the position with 44 that one year. So that's a glimpse and a reminder of what Connor Hellebuck's ceiling could be. And you can get Connor Hellebuck feeding off that Jets conversation we had earlier. You could get him probably around the top 10, top 15 at the position. And he could be a huge bargain based on ADP.
Darcy Kemper is up there for me as well. I don't think we've said his name. Stanley Cup winner Darcy Kemper going to a recently Stanley Cup winning team that still has a lot of great players, a lot of great assets. And, you know, that's one team where the players just don't seem to regress. They keep putting up the points, putting up the production. They got an elite defenseman with John Carlson. Alex Ovechkin had a phenomenal year last year. If he replicates it, I'm just absolutely going to be amazed. And they replaced Nicklas Backstrom and some concerns revolving him with Dylan Strome, who honestly didn't do that terribly in Chicago, given what he had to work with. So Darcy Kemper could be another goalie that could reach that mid 30 point this season.
That's what we do on this podcast. We give away state secrets. You're going to win your fantasy league if you listen to this episode. And guys, I just want to tip my cap. I know I'm not wearing one right now, but phenomenal job on these stat projections. I know I couldn't have done it.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Nick. I think our producer, Bobby, was hoping for some credit to go his way, but we'll see if he chimes in soon as the season gets closer. T-minus 1 month until the NHL season begins. Definitely go back and check out our season preview episodes, Mock Draft 1.0. We got Mock Draft 2.0 coming up very soon. We got the off-season moves, the top 250 rankings, the sleepers, the keepers, the rookies. Go and check it out. And the most important thing you could do for us to support the show is to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. So go out and do that. We appreciate you listening and following along ahead of your preseason draft. So for Nick Alberga, Anna Dua, thanks so much for joining us, Anna. And we'll talk to you all next time. Pete saying so long. NHL Fantasy on Ice. Thanks for listening.
Don't forget to rate and review. And if anyone comments Flurry Flakes in the review, you're going to be my favorite listener. So the first review I see with Flurry Flakes, shout out on the next pod. So go at it.